Welcome to another edition of Influence, the global podcast that shines a spotlight on the influencer marketing industry. My name is Gordon Glenister. And for those of you that don't know me, I'm a keynote speaker, trainer, and consultant in the sector, and more recently published author on influencer marketing strategy. And in this podcast series, you'll hear me interview all sorts of people from the world of influencer marketing. But before we start, please don't forget to subscribe to this podcast series just to make sure that you don't miss a future episode. Today, I'm talking to a LinkedIn guru, Mark Williams, so much so that he's even got this in his title on LinkedIn, aka Mr. LinkedIn. And we're going to be talking about how to create influence and engagement on one of the most arguably biggest social media platforms. So welcome, Mark. Lovely to see you on the show today.
Thanks, Gordon. It's good to be here.
So let's sort of roll back and tell our listeners a little bit more about you and how you became to be Mr. LinkedIn.
Yeah, well, it's not a name change by default or anything like that. The Mr. LinkedIn thing came about actually as a result of a Twitter name. Early days of Twitter, I decided I ought to probably get on the platform. Thought, oh, what should I call myself? I know, Mr. LinkedIn. Tried that. It was already taken. So I went Mr. _ LinkedIn, as you do. And that one was available. So I thought that'll do. And that's what people then just started referring to me as. This is a long time ago now. My background was originally recruitment before I did this. I was running a recruitment business. And if you think about it, LinkedIn in the early days was really all about recruitment. That was kind of the name of the game, really. The only active people on LinkedIn were recruiters. The only people that ever went there were people looking for a job. And so it was natural in my job to get interested in it. I had some people working for me, one guy in particular, a chap called Tom, who was a top performer. And one day I'm sat in the office looking out at my sales team, and Tom was there. And normally Tom's on the phone, you know, really active guy, which is why he's successful. And he was just sat there looking at the computer screen for hours. And I thought, I don't like the look of this. It's one or two things. Either he's been out the night before and had a few too many beers, or he's leaving and he's switched off. The latter of those terrified me because he was a top performer. So I thought, I'd been in to have a word with him. So I dragged him into my office and I said, Tom, how's it going? Yeah, all right, boss. I said, a little bit concerned about you today. What's the matter? And he went, nothing's the matter. And I said, come on. He said, oh, I know what it is. He said, you're worried because I've not been on the phone today. And I went, that's right. He said, well, I found this website called LinkedIn. And I went, all right. He said, yeah, it's a bit like Facebook, but for business. And I went, come on, Tom, you're not going to make money staring at a computer screen all day. This is me saying this. And he went, no, you don't understand. It's really good. You know, and started giving me the sales pitch for it. And I was like, oh, whatever. But I thought he's a top performer. I can't just dismiss this. So I better have a look at it and just give him my strong case as to why he should never go there again. And I never really managed to make the case. The more I looked at it, the more I thought, wow, I can't believe this thing. You know, I'd been in business and in sales for many, many years. To me, it was all about your contacts and knowing your contacts and building relationships with your contacts and leveraging those contacts. And now I was looking at this website that showed me everyone's contacts. I was like, this can't be for real. What? So I can just go to someone's profile and see who they know, just like that. I know it sounds obvious now, but at the time, to me, it was like, absolutely blew me away. So I decided I ought to probably get my head around it and look for someone who can come and train people in my business to use it properly, because they were trained with everything else. So why not train them on this? I couldn't find anyone. There were some trainers in the US, to be fair, in those days, but I decided I'd have to train them myself. So that's what I did, learned the platform, started using it, tried to understand it better, and then delivered little courses for my team myself on how to use it. When I look back, it was extremely basic. But off the back of that, we got some really good results, particularly with regards to business development. And again, going back to that day, most recruiters were using it as a way of just finding candidates and advertising jobs. But it seemed to me, because of my background in sales, that this was a business development tool. It just struck me as being obvious because of all the things I've mentioned, really, the visibility of contacts and finding people and being able to engage with them and all the rest of it. And so that's the way I trained the people that worked for me. And we got some great results from it from a, you know, new client point of view. So what then happened was, long story cut short, that company was taken over, ended up not enjoying working for the new people. So I set up on my own as a LinkedIn trainer, the first in the UK. and one of only a handful across the world at the time. This is 2008. Great year to start a new business. Back bang in a recession. But it was good, actually, because it was a real challenge. I suppose it's like anything new, really. I can remember people openly mocking what I was doing. Like, what, you train people to use a social media site? I mean, what? You know, you don't need to train people. People just pick it up, don't they? And I was like, well, that might be the case for a certain generation and with certain websites. And I wouldn't disagree with using something like Twitter or Facebook just for fun. But if you're trying to use something as a business tool, then you ought to be not wasting your time and focusing on the right things. And also, I don't think you quite realize the depth of this thing. If you think it's funny that someone should need to be trained to use it, you don't understand the depth to it, because there's a lot to it. And that was back in 2008. I mean, now, completely different ball game, so much more depth to it. So that's it. Yeah, 13 years. Believe it or not, it's amazing that. I can't believe I've been doing this for 13 years, but there you go.
I mean, that's the thing. You've become really an expert in this area. And of course, now, particularly in the last 12 months with lockdown, more people have engaged in LinkedIn and than ever before, and realizing, because they've not been able to go out and see their customers or their prospects, they're starting to see the real power that this tool has. There's been a lot of changes, of course, hasn't there, more recently? I noticed that you've got your little video on your profile now, as have I. So maybe just bring us up to speed with some of the real latest developments that you've noticed that are going to make a real difference for businesses.
As always with LinkedIn, they make changes, and some of them you go, whatever, not quite sure where they're going with that one. And then others you go, oh, actually, that could be really useful. But only really over time will you ever know. So always with these things, it's probably premature to say whether it's going to be a big deal or not. But the three latest things they brought out were pronouns, creator mode, and cover story. Out of those, the most impactful, I think, is cover story. But just to quickly cover the others, pronouns is obviously where you have, you know, after your name, he, him, or she, her. The idea behind that, I think, is partly practical, about allowing people to express how they want to be addressed. And people are using it for a variety of reasons. So you'll see people using it, even though it's obvious what gender they are, to support people where it's not so obvious. So to make that not such a big deal. And I get that. But then you see other people using that field to add something like marketing words, you know, or things that describe what they do. And there's been a lot of controversy about this, because people are saying that's offensive to transgender people and all the rest of it. I mean, you know, look, you can't help people taking offense to things. I don't personally think it's offensive. Look, if there's an area of a profile and you're not going to use it for its intended purpose, is it offensive to use it for something else? I don't think so. But, and this is why I wanted to mention this, it's not very clever. And what I mean by that is that LinkedIn are renowned for stamping down on people that use a feature for not its intended purpose. If you did that, I don't know an example where this has happened so far, but in my view, based on a lot of experience of knowing how LinkedIn behave as a company, there's a good chance you could get into some kind of trouble for doing that. And there's no real benefit in terms of keywords or anything like that. It's not a searchable field. So not something I'd advise doing, but there is a section, you know, obviously in that area that you can type whatever you want to. I think it's 20 characters or something like that. By all means, you can say something that kind of suits. Like, I've got respect for all in mine, right? Because I don't feel comfortable going he, him. I just think it's too obvious. Why would I say that? So I was kind of trying to do something to show a bit of support for people. So, but I think people should use it however they want, but just be careful of doing things that don't fit with what LinkedIn are trying to achieve. That's a fairly small feature, but important to some people. Creator mode, there was a big fuss about this, because LinkedIn have woken up to the fact, as have many social media sites, that the reason why people go there is because of the content that other people produce. I guess they've always known this, but they're really paying attention to it now more than ever. And so they created, excuse the pun, this thing called Creator Mode. When it first came out, a lot of people were getting very excited about it. I can only think because it's called Creator Mode. Because honestly, I looked at it and I went, okay, it's a bit nothingy, really. There's not an awful lot to it. It makes your follower number more visible. And you have to have follow as your primary button if you enable it. You don't have to enable it. And I think that's an advantage. I think if you see at the top of someone's profile how many followers someone's got, that affects their influence. And I think people are more likely to follow them as well. So they go, oh, this person's got 20,000 followers, that they must be good. I'll follow them, you know. So I think that's quite useful, not amazing, but useful. Underneath that, you can pick up to 5 hashtags that you write about. This is just another attempt by LinkedIn to make hashtags relevant on LinkedIn, but the vast majority of people on LinkedIn don't understand hashtags. So I'm not really sure it's going to make any difference. So that's a bit of a nothing feature, really. It does change the layout of your profile so that your posts show higher, whereas it used to be all activity and it was halfway down your profile. And now right at the top, you can see someone's post. And also the featured section, which traditionally was underneath the about section, is now above it and more visible as well. And that allows you to put media in your profile. So I think it's an improvement, but it's not anything to get too excited about. Of course, we don't know where they're going to go with it. My view on it is, if people say to me, should I enable creator mode? I've got the option and it's not fully rolled out yet, so not everyone will have the option. My answer is normally yes on that, because there's no evidence at the moment that they're giving you any benefit in the feed, you know, so your posts are not being seen by more people because you have creator mode. That doesn't appear to be the case. In fact, some people are actually reporting the opposite, but I think that's for other reasons. I don't think that's related to creator mode. But they could do, or they could do other things that may benefit us as creators of content. So my view would be, watch this space. Its starting point is fairly basic and it may develop no further, but it might. So it's worth keeping an eye on. But the one worth getting really excited about is cover story, which is the one that you alluded to before. And this is where on your profile picture, you can add a 30-second video, really just introducing yourself. I did a post about this years ago as an April Fool's post. I did a video and I kind of mocked up my profile. Well, what I actually did was delete the picture and had a video behind it. So you wouldn't know that, but it looked like my profile picture was a video. I did it as a April Fool's joke saying, oh, it's a great new feature. You know, your profile picture is now a video. And lo and behold, here we are about 5 years later, and they've actually brought it in as a real feature. I'm not claiming any credit for that, by the way. Quite sure nobody at LinkedIn saw that stupid video that I did all those years ago. But it is good, because at the end of the day, LinkedIn's all about people and it's all about getting to know someone. And there's nothing quite like video to introduce yourself, really. And I think it's a great feature. So someone goes to your profile. As they load up your profile, the first thing they'll notice is that your profile picture has an orange circle around it. And then the next thing they'll notice is that the static picture, which is the way it's always been, suddenly converts into a video just for 3 seconds. Right? You don't hear anything. Now, there's no sound to it, but you just see a bit of movement and it kind of gets your attention. Then if you click on it or tap on it, if it's on mobile, you then get to watch the 30-second video. This has to be recorded and uploaded on mobile. Okay, you can't do that on desktop, although you can view them on desktop. It's a good opportunity to just say hello to your profile viewers, really. You see a variety of different people taking different approaches to it. I actually did an episode about it on my podcast, highlighting some of the best ones that I've seen. A couple of tips on that, really. I think no big sales pitch. I mean, same with everything on LinkedIn. Don't make it a big sales pitch. Try and be natural. You're just meeting someone for the first time. So, you know, just a quick hi, this is what I'm all about. Maybe a call to action, you know, get in touch if you want to talk about this, that, and the other, or you need any help with this or something along those lines. But nothing salesy, just a friendly introduction. But the most important tip is that by default, for some reason, LinkedIn have made it that only your first tier connections see it, which when you think about it, is a bit pointless, really. I mean, you really want that to be seen by everyone that comes to your profile. And so you just need to make sure in the setting. So when you click on it at the bottom of your video, you'll see that setting and you can change it to all, and so that everybody can actually watch your video. That's quite important, because a lot of people think if you don't have the feature, you can't see someone else's cover story, which actually was the case when they first brought it out. That's not the case anymore. Anybody, whether they've got the feature or not, can see your cover story, but only, of course, if you make sure that it's visible to all. But that, I think, is a really cool feature.
I love it. And I must admit, I'm now going to go and check after this episode that it's available to all, because I hadn't realized that. So, that's a great share there, Mark. Thank you. Obviously, when we're talking about its influence and many people want to become more influential, but they don't really do it well with the way that they promote themselves on LinkedIn. So what are some of the mistakes or howlers that you've seen?
Where do I start with that one? I mentioned before about spammy content or promotional content. I think the kind of rule here is don't do anything that's seen or anything in great quantity that's seen as being self-serving, right? So be very sensitive to your audience and what they might think. People talk about making your content helpful, which is great advice, but define helpful. To me, helpful is putting out something, whether that be a message, by the way, or a post, that your target audience will genuinely find helps them. But that doesn't mean that what I should do is put out something that is clearly related to the services that I provide that do help them, but they will just perceive that as being self-serving. Of course they will, right? So it doesn't matter how helpful I might think it is. If it's related to my services, then they're going to view it as just being very spammy. So people are hyper sensitive about this on LinkedIn. They just don't want to be promoted to at all. That doesn't mean you should never, ever do a promotional post. It's absolutely fine in small quantities once you're in a position where your audience are really invested in you. So I've got no problem with people talking about the fact they've won an award when they have a strong following of people that have bought into them. Because what will happen, people love good news on LinkedIn and people love to celebrate that, and they will do, and they'll talk about it and they'll spread the word, and that's fantastic. But don't do that without an audience. If that audience isn't invested in you, you're just promoting yourself. You're just showing off, humble brags. Yeah. So it's just about the balance of getting that right, really. Occasional promotional posting is okay. But people kind of go, oh, I'm on LinkedIn, I need to promote my business. You know, this is a marketing tool. It's not a marketing tool. I mean, it can be used as a marketing tool, but that's something for the marketing department to worry about. And they can do ads and all the rest of it. Feel free, right? And we'll ignore those. But your job as a LinkedIn user is to network. It's a networking tool, not a marketing
tool. Relationship tool, isn't it? It's a relationship tool.
Absolutely. So if you look at it that way, yes, we understand that it's important to be visible. And there are lots of techniques that can help you become more visible. But the best technique of all is just to put out really good, helpful, widely appealing, interesting, sometimes funny, maybe, content. That's what makes you visible. But anything that's perceived as promotional just goes nowhere. So that's probably the biggest one, the most common one I come across anyway. Some other little gems: posting links. If you do a post and it's got a link to something external, it won't do very well. Now, that's not because the algorithm's stopping it being seen by people. A lot of people think that. It's not that at all. It's because your action of putting a link in your post is encouraging people to click on the link. Obviously, right? That's why you did it. But the problem with that is that's what they'll do. So your best case scenario in that situation is they're going to click on your link and they're going to leave LinkedIn and they're not going to like or comment on your post. Now, if they don't like a comment on your post, then their followers are not going to see it. Your main form of distribution is the organic reach your post will achieve through other people engaging with your post. If you put a link, they won't. So I would say 99 times out of 100, just don't bother with a link, right? Now, there may be occasions where you have to, like, you know, if you're promoting an event or talking about an event and people had to sign up and here's a page where you sign up, you can't avoid it then.
Would you put it in the comments at all?
Well, you can, but again, you are still sending people away, aren't you? But if you put a link in the comments, they're more likely to go to the comments and comment themselves. It's still a problem because the intention there is that they go to the comments, they see it at the top of the comments, and that's not always the case. Sometimes it gets lost, in which case they don't see it at all. But if they see it at the top of the comments, chances are they're going to click on it. So not a lot different, really. And you haven't got them to engage with it. There are ways around that, but largely speaking, it's better to try to not use links full stop rather than be too clever about it. Probably the biggest mistake, but I don't think people perceive it as a mistake, they think it's clever, is automation. Any form of message or invitation or commenting automation is really bad news, like the worst thing you can do on LinkedIn. And there are a number of aspects to this. One is you are putting your account at serious risk. The people that sell you automation products will not tell you that because it's not their risk. It's not their account. It's your account. I know people, know of people who have lost their complete LinkedIn account, all their followers, tens of thousands in some cases, and they won't be allowed back in either unless they change their name, which is really silly. So you can get completely taken off LinkedIn for it. But more than that, for me anyway, it's like we've got this amazing place where we can network with other professionals. And if we do it right, we can make a real success of it. This can become our most powerful tool to generate business. It's amazing when dealt with in the right way. Okay, so what are you doing by ruining that experience for lots of people? The only reason to automate is that you want to do something multiple times on the basis that you know most people will reject. Because if you felt you were going to get 100% success rate, then automating would be a disaster because you get too many responses. You wouldn't be able to deal with them all. So the only reason to automate is because you know you're going to get a low hit rate. Okay, so it's like email marketing. If 95% of your messages or invitations are rejected, then the 95% don't find that a pleasant experience. And if you multiply that by everyone using automation across the whole platform, and if that continues to grow, what happens is that valuable contacts that we want access to stop using LinkedIn. They don't necessarily leave LinkedIn, they stop using LinkedIn, and then it becomes less valuable tool for us all. And it's about understanding the bigger picture there for me. So automation is a kind of short-term win. Let's overfish. We don't care about the long-term future of the planet. We're just going to overfish. We don't care. And for me, that's just crazy. It makes no sense whatsoever.
100%. I mean, I agree entirely. It's one thing that really aggravates me is when you've accepted a connection because you think it's in the sort of the same demographic, and all of a sudden, bingo, you're into a pre-rehearsed, this is what we do. And it just irritates the hell out of me. Actually, I have no desire to want to speak with them because I haven't, there's no relationship that's been developed or trust.
Yeah. The annoying thing about that is that it's actually a good idea to follow up a connection with a message for algorithmic reasons, right? So the algorithm, when you connect, it's going, oh, right. So you've just come across each other, but is it a real connection or not? We want to know if you're interested in each other or not. So let's see what happens next. So if we connect and I send you a message and you reply to that message, the algorithm's going, all right, so this is just not any old connection. You're actually getting on quite well. So I'll tell you what, next time you do a post, Gordon, I'm going to make sure Mark sees it. So actually, it's a good technique to do that, provided you get a reply. Funnily enough, I was talking about this with someone just the other day. And I used you as an example, funnily enough, because I remember when you first contacted me and it was a very personalized message. I think it might have been via email rather than LinkedIn, but principle's the same. Very personalized, quoting someone specific and also talking about things that were very relevant to me. And when you receive that initial message after connection, immediately you go, what's this going to be? The hackles come up and you think, oh, right. But actually, if it's well delivered with the right message and it's personalized, it's clear that person has taken the time and attention to you, then it works really well and people will respond. But I like to encourage people to do that first message by a voice message, because that way, that clearly can't be automated. So you are really differentiating against the bots, because you've not spoken to that person before and it's an initial contact. What better way than to hear your voice or even do a video message, which you can also do. Both of those can only be done in the mobile app, but both are available to us and nice, easy way of making initial contact. So it is frustrating, that whole automation thing, especially when it gets in the way of good technique like that.
Great tips and advice there. I mean, obviously, the other thing that I'm very passionate about is storytelling, because it's a big part of the world of influencer marketing per se. I was going to ask you if you have come across people that have really, you've noticed, entrepreneurs or others that you've seen really do a great job in this.
Loads. I have a list that's now about 25 people on this list. So I'm not going to go through them all. I'll throw six at you to make a note of, and I'll send you the details so you can put these in the show notes. Craig Brooks. Craig has been on my podcast. Craig Brooks is a burly, bearded, rough and tumble double glazing salesman. He runs a home improvements double glazing company, and he's very, very straight talking, and he has a fantastic following, and he sells product all the time on LinkedIn. And that's a business to consumer business, high value to be fair. But even so, he is very opinionated in his posts and people love him for it. On the marketing side of things, there's a chap called Dan Kelsall. It won't be everybody's cup of tea because he's, as Peter Kay would say, very blue. So some of his content might be a bit offensive to some people, and he definitely rides a bit of a line, but he is who he is, and he's a Manchester lad, and he's straight talking, and he is exceptionally good at marketing. And so if you look, his posts, most of them are actually document posts. He's a great advocate of document posts. And you look at his posts, you will see an expert in practice. He totally knows his audience, and he knows how to relate to his audience, sometimes through storytelling, not always. On the LinkedIn side of things, there's a couple of people worth mentioning. Andreas Jonsson is the CEO of a company called Shield, which is the LinkedIn analytics company. He writes really interesting, mainly text-only posts, often around the subject of content and what content works and why. He has a lot of analytics behind what he does. His content's interesting, but apart from that, if you study the techniques that he uses, these are not out of just pure taste on his part. These have been formulated based on data, and he knows what works and what doesn't work because Shield has thousands and thousands of users, and he has access to that information. So well worth following. And then the other guy from a LinkedIn interest point of view, but more from a recruitment, but if there's anybody listening who's involved in recruitment, there's a guy called Joel Lalge, which is L-A-L-G-E. Great storytelling, great posts, gets fantastic traction, and really mixes his posts up. So some video, some image, some text only. He's equally good on all of those different types of posts, which is rare, actually. You tend to find someone, you know, is good at one but not so good at the others. Copywriting. Now, someone that knows how to write good copy and demonstrates it all the time on LinkedIn with great storytelling is a guy called Dave Harland. And then the final one I mentioned, who doesn't have amazing numbers, but he has a great story. And that's a chap called Jordan Wilson. Young lad, set up a clothing brand from scratch, promoted it on LinkedIn, and has grown a business on the back of it. From very humble beginnings and getting out there and posting on LinkedIn and being brave enough to do it. And it's unusual, you know, people of his generation, millennials, I don't know how old he is, I'll guess early 20s max. People of his generation tend to hold back on LinkedIn a lot. They find it quite an intimidating place, full of all these experienced people who really know what they're talking about. And he was brave enough to give it a go and really has received the benefit of being able to get his business off the ground through what he's done on LinkedIn. So it's a really nice story as to how he's done it. I'd love to kind of get to grips with his content and give him some advice, because he could do much better, actually, in terms of his content. But I massively admire the fact that he's gone out there and done it. So there's six for you anyway. So
awesome. No, some great, great names. I'll definitely have a look and follow those. All guys as well. Is LinkedIn more male, female? What's the gender split?
No, it's about equal, actually.
Is it?
Yeah, funnily enough, that's pure coincidence. I probably should have looked at that and given you some female ones as well. I also wouldn't say that there's any particular bias in terms of good content. That's just pure coincidence. They happen to all be male. I think the numbers are about equal. And I don't know if there's any data to support this, but my guess would be the numbers in terms of activities probably fairly equal as well.
Whereas on Instagram, of course, Instagram has got a higher female bias, and particularly when it comes to influencer marketing, of course. Whereas within thought leaders, you have higher percentage that are men, particularly on LinkedIn. And it's just an interesting split depending on the type of industry that you're in.
Yeah. I'll tell you one female that springs to mind without going to my list. Elise Finn, E-L-I-S-E, surname Finn, F-I-N-N. Elise is a marketing professional by background, but sort of senior level within quite large organizations. Really switched on, actually. And she now kind of coaches females. So very female orientated content. Although, to be honest, a lot of it is stuff that would be applicable to any gender. you know, I really like her content. Some of it is quite thought-provoking and generally gets good numbers. She didn't go viral very often, if at all, but she would average maybe 30, 40 comments per post, something like that off the top of my head. She's an interesting person to follow. She comes out with some quite insightful stuff about a whole range of things from mental health to managing people and very practical subjects, but really good content.
I mean, I was going to ask you about sort of Clubhouse and LinkedIn Live. We were just talking about video and voice, weren't we, earlier? I was wondering what's next for LinkedIn and whether or not, did Clubhouse have any impact on LinkedIn or not?
I don't think people are getting the numbers with LinkedIn Live that they used to get. But I think that is probably just due to other reasons rather than Clubhouse. You know, LinkedIn Live as a format is very much about, like LinkedIn Stories, it's not about visibility. It's about developing a relationship with your audience that already exists. If I was to watch your live and I was to comment while you're live, that doesn't carry on to my followers. So it's not like a normal post in that regards. It's the same with stories. You know, if I see your story on LinkedIn and I comment on it, that's a DM to you, but nobody else sees it. There's very little visibility benefit. But LinkedIn is not all about visibility. You know, once you've built an audience, and visibility is always important, but, you know, once you've built an audience, you really want to foster a relationship and develop that relationship with that audience. And things like LinkedIn Live are really good for that. Now, Clubhouse is more about being discovered. I mean, it can also be about developing the relationship as well, of course, as can any post on LinkedIn. But it is also a platform where you may get noticed by people who don't know you. And they go, who's this guy? He seems to talk a lot of sense. And then, you know, want to know more about you type of thing. So has that benefit. Now, of course, LinkedIn have said that they are developing their own audio interaction. We'll wait and see what that looks like. I'm slightly worried, if I'm honest. I love the idea of Clubhouse. I think Clubhouse is far too general to be of interest to most people on LinkedIn. But I think if you took the format and made it just about business and specific to a LinkedIn audience, I think it could do very well. What worries me is that LinkedIn, when they copy someone else's stuff like that, they always manage to do it badly. I never quite understand how they manage to do it, because you think, well, someone else has done it, right? All you need to do is just copy that. But they don't. They always have this thing about, we have to do it differently somehow. And the differently bit is always rubbish. So, like, LinkedIn Stories is just horrendous in comparison to, say, Instagram Stories. It's just absolutely miles behind. And yet they have all the advantage of seeing how Instagram Stories works and just copy it, for goodness sake. But no, they don't do that. They have to do it their own way. What they have hinted at is that their version of Clubhouse on LinkedIn will be part of events. I kind of understand why they've thought that, but I think it's a bad idea. I actually think that if you made whatever they call it, LinkedIn audio or audio conversations or audio debate, if you made that part of groups, that would actually revitalize groups. It will be a reason for people to go to groups. And at the end of the day, groups are supposed to be that. They are supposed to be community areas where people can go and debate and talk to each other and find new people through that interaction. And that's what groups used to be before they were ruined by spam. And you could get that back, because spam in an audio format is a bit harder to do, right? I mean, don't get me wrong, on Clubhouse, there are some people that I would describe as the voice of spam, for sure. And it's got worse, I think. I mean, I don't really do Clubhouse much these days, but I think it's got worse more recently, which would be always going to be the case as things get more popular. But I could see that working. But the indication appears to be thus far that they're going to make it part of events. I don't think that would be very good. I don't think that would work so well. But we'll have to wait and see. I'm expecting something maybe around the autumn time for that. We'll wait and see what happens.
Awesome. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you, as always. We should do another one of these later in the year, because I reckon we could fill a couple of hours easy talking, and I'm sure we're going to love hearing more from you. So how can people find out more about you, Mark?
Well, strangely enough, I'm on LinkedIn. So linkedin.com/in/MrLinkedIn. That's probably the best place where you can follow me. But also, of course, I have a podcast called LinkedIn Informed, which is all one word, linkedinformed.com is the website. And but just search for that on your podcast player of choice.
This podcast is supported by the Branded Content Marketing Association, promoting the value of influencer marketing globally.
So that's it for another edition of Influence. Don't forget to subscribe to the show and give me your feedback, gordon@gordonglenister.com, or you can follow me on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, where you can also ask me a particular question. If you're able to leave us a 5-star review on the show, that would be great because we really appreciate it. If you also want some help in creating influencer marketing strategy, or you want to help in other influencer marketing issues, then please join the Influencer Marketing Roundtable weekly event. You can find out more on my website. And lastly, thanks as always to my producer, Neil Whiteside from Freedom One. Until next time, from me, Gordon Glenister, it's bye for now.